Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. New content makers reaching into the KidVid universe have a new home through Kids Room Television. Partnership director Anna McMichael joins me next. The new TV season, a.k.a. 2022-23, is underway. What's taking hold with viewers now and possibly later? We will find out later this hour from the Wrap TV reporter Natalie Oganesian. And Hulu is on a pizza cooking spree with Best in Dough. Executive producer Dan Cutforth gives us the sauce on this exercise, top of the next hour. Also ahead, Chromecast gets smarter. Amazon and TV Jake's powwow. Our new classic trivia winner, yes, we have a winner. And Roku's new landscape, our takeaway of the week. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on Spotify, the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, and other leading podcast platforms. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. And on this first full day of autumn 2022, we welcome you to the program all about TV's current and future. 62 degrees at the top of the hour. We have a jam-packed 90 minutes for you, and we invite you to be on the phone and be in the chat room because we have a lot to get into, and we want you to interact with our guests. How do you do it? You pick up the phone, you dial in, and you use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn Radio. And then there is our chat room. It's SimonApple04 by name. Get into the room. Another great way to, if you're shy with the phone, get involved with our guests. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you will find that chat room at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. It's on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instruction, other people will be live with you. And Anna McMichael from Blog Bog and Kids Room TV will join us live from San Diego, California, IA, after these news notes. 9 years after entering the smart product environment, Google's Chromecast device is getting a huge capacity and capability lift. With Google TV as the operating system, the latest Chromecast model on sale offers more than 10,000 apps, voice activation from Google Assistant, and all sorts of interactive smart home abilities, from video calls and conferencing to Nest Video Doorbell monitoring. This Chromecast unit sells for $29.99, and early buyers will get 6 months of Peacock free. Amazon Freevee is bringing on past and future video content from Bane Bishop's TD Jakes. More than 300 hours of Jakes-hosted or produced series will be offered on Freevee starting December 1st, and a new 24/7 faith-based channel will premiere in early next year. The agreement, running through the end of 2024, opens the door for Amazon and Jake's organization developing scripted series, movies, and other ventures. Insecure and the Vampire Diaries co-star Kedrick Sampson is forming BLDPWR Productions, venture out to design and distribute a variety of content for various TV platforms. Former TV One original programming leader D'Angela Proctor will serve as the venture's strategic advisor, with former Netflix official Taylor Jett as development director. The programmer held a special event in Los Angeles last night. And now before our first guest, let's give it some quickies. Season 2 of recent Emmy-winning HBO series The White Lotus from Mike White will begin October 30th. Long-awaited novel adaptation Fleischman Is in Trouble comes to FX on Hulu November 17th. Tim Burton's Addams Family offshoot series Wednesday, with Jenna Ortega in the title role, arrives on Netflix November 23rd. And when the 2023 Super Bowl plays on February 12th, Pepsi will be out as the halftime show sponsor. Apple Music is in. It's the first change of halftime advertiser since 2013. And that is news notes for today. If you've listened to this program over the last year, you know we have featured a lot of new television networks available to you through smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. Well, we begin this episode with yet another. It's called Kids Room TV, and it's a way for first-time people in the field to create original shows for this channel. And that's not all. The parent company of the service, Blogbox, is also trying to get other new television services off the ground in a smart TV fashion. Joining us live from San Diego is the partnership director for Blogbox and Kidsroom TV, Anna McMichael. Anna, welcome in.
Hi. Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. So for those people who don't know, because Kidsroom TV just started a few weeks ago on Roku with other smart TV products to come, what is Kidsroom TV and how is it unique from other KidVid channels you can find elsewhere?
Thank you very much for your question, and I'm totally happy to present our new baby, our new product in the team in our company called Kids from Tea. So really what it is, it's an aggregated channel that is live on all of the main CTV platforms, including Roku, Amazon Fire, Android TV, Apple TV. So what's really unique about it, it's the fact that it's a very safe space for kids where we, you know, cherry picking the content creators and bringing their content on the platform. I think what's unique about it is that we don't only concentrate on big content creators with huge audience, but also opening up and discovering new small creators that probably have only 2-3 hours of content and they need more exposure on the market and they have truly high quality animation, but it's just not get revealed anywhere and it's really hard to find them. So we've had experience meeting a lot content owners like this. So we realized that this is the perfect opportunity for having those partners, for having this animation be live on a large platform and be accessible for pretty much every kid who has TV in the house, along with discovering new content. But also since we do take it, you know, from heart and we pick up the content and we look exactly what values the content passes, this is very important that the shows or animation or cartoon is going to have certain values passed to kids as well. I'm talking about education, creativity, family values, and things like that.
Before we get into some specific content makers, generally speaking, what kind of animation do these creators want to produce, whether it's a certain type of genre, comedy, dramedy, science fiction, adventure, fantasy? Do they want to give kids a better experience, sort of treat them as equals, if you will, in the writing and directing? What kind of content do these folks want to make?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, I would say the target audience, we really break it down by ages. So it's anywhere from 0 to 1, which is more like a nursery rhyme type of content, little song, little game, some short type of videos that kids can just mostly observe and get something out of it. And then we also have a lot of content for toddlers, preschoolers, and kids from 5 to 12. So really the content can be content variety anywhere from nursery rhymes to educational animation to superhero animation to something language learning, some type of like a comedy little animation shows. Pretty much things like that. That's what's available for really the age group of from 0 to 12.
And how is the content arranged on the service? Is it available to everybody 24/7? Do you do it like a channel where you block out, let's say, from X time to X time, this is the type of programming we do, X time, daytime, prime time, weekend, goes to specific creators or specific genres?
Yeah, so this is more like an AVOD channel that is live on the Roku channel browser. So it's pretty much available on demand. So anytime you want to watch it, you can click on it, open up, and just pick the category that you would like to watch, whether it's, like I said, nursery rhymes or any type of other animation. It's not programmed based on the hours, but all content is safe for kids. So it's available anytime parents or kids want to watch it.
And it's ad supported?
I'm sorry? Yes, it is.
Is it ad supported? Is the service ad supported?
Yes, it is ad supported.
And we'll talk a little more about that as we go along. We're talking about the new service, Kids Room TV. It is now running on various smart TV sets and smart TV devices, including Roku, Apple TV, Amazon Fire TV, and TV sets with Android TV as the operating system. Anna McMichael is the partnership director of the service and its parent company, BlogBox. We'll talk about other channels that BlogBox is up to causing now and in the near future. She joins us live from San Diego, California, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Happy you are with us on this first autumn day of 2022. Simon Applebaum with you live from New Weather York. It's 63 degrees at the top of the hour. And if you have a question or comment for Anna, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Next week, one of the largest television festivals in the United States will take place. It's called Catalyst, and it will be in Duluth, Minnesota, and we will go there live on Monday afternoon to meet our lead guest, the executive director of the Catalyst Story Institute. That's the folks who make the festival happen, Philip Gilpin, Jr. This festival, coming up next week, will have more than 100 TV series pilots, pitches, scenarios, all looking for a home on various television services. And we'll talk to Philip about that. We'll also talk about the future of the television festival, given the fact that we still don't have a New York television festival back on here in the Big Apple 4 years after the last one. As Philip Gilpin, Jr. from Catalyst Story Institute, live from the festival in Duluth, Minnesota, Monday afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Give us some examples, Anna, of some of the new content creators that you are finding and giving a showcase through your service.
Yeah, sure. So, for example, one of the content creators that we found, maybe I'm not able to disclose some of the names, but I have an example of some of the content creators that were working with Netflix, and they had contracts for about a year, let's say, and then the contract is expired. They still want, you know, keep going with their animation and make sure it gets exposed. So we can work with partners like that as well. So we give them more audience, and we constantly showing them on this big screen. So this is one of the reasons. Other content creators can be, really some, you know, some small animation studio, or actually some companies that used to do work for hire, right? So for bigger animation studio, they're kind of making a step forward where they just want to create their own IP and be in charge of their distribution. And we help them as well because they have a channel through us to get their content out there.
Mm-hmm. Are there any individual series, and I know you're only 2 or 3 weeks in to your existence, that are looking like they will be flagship shows? In other words, shows that will sort of define the channel, will define the service.
I'm sorry, say it again. You cut off for a second.
Are there any individual series that are starting to get a fandom or get a interesting reaction from viewers that you see will be a flagship or like a high-profile series for your service?
Yeah, well, like you said, we're only 3 weeks from here, but really working in this industry for quite a while, especially with the kids content, and when you kind of reviewing the content that you upload into your platform, you already see, depends on the quality of animation and the message that is behind it, you kind of can see what is going to really boost the viewership of the channel as well. So it's like, I don't know, not really intuition, but I would say experience that really tells you that, okay, this is going to work and this is going to be probably the top performing one. But inside of our channel, we have an ability of rotating the channel. So we make sure that content equally gets visible. If it's something new and if it's not getting too much attention yet, we make sure we kind of boost it a little bit so kids still can see the opportunity to watch that specific channel.
Is there a wide variety of animation that's being displayed, whether it's Cell, 3D, computer animation, Flash, all sorts of different styles?
Well, with kids, I would say, you know, as long as they follow with the concept of the content, as long as it's engaging, as long as they like it, I wouldn't say that those specs are really number one priority, I would say. It is important, of course, yes. We can see what goes better, what goes wrong, what goes a little bit worse. But I feel like for kids, they would be okay with watching really different types of shows, that really different qualities. And it's kind of an interesting audience. You know, it works a little bit different than adults.
Mm-hmm. What led your parent company, VlogBog, to put together Kids Room TV? How long has this channel been in development for?
So we launched 3 weeks ago. It's been, you know, we've been thinking about it for quite a while. And what really brought us here is that we can see, like, looking back to analytics, looking back at the viewership results, and we used to do what VlogBox really used to do before. We used to create solo channel for our partners. And it was not only kids. it was different type. It was movies, it was kids, it was travel and cooking shows and different things like that. So we really saw that kids animation is something that is getting picked up really, really fast on connected TV. And I feel like the reason why is because, well, first of all, parents have a little bit more control over what their kids watch if there is a solo channel or dedicated channel with some type of content already packed inside. So parents have a little bit more control, and I feel like now parents tend to watch content with their kids together. So that's another reason, and I can see that shift, that kids content is the amazing way to really do your monetization and then to create something new, to get it out there. It's really fast-paced environment that grows day by day. So that's mm-hmm. why we kind of looked at it from the other way, like, okay, well, kids is definitely a great category and we have amazing content creators. So why wouldn't we create an aggregator where we can bring famous creators, and then we can bring not as famous creators, but we will give them exposure, because sometimes the content is not going to be recognized unless it's a part of aggregated experience. So we tested it out, we talked internally, and we decided to launch it, and so far, so good.
What kind of advertising response are you getting from the service so far, and what kind of effort is there when you get advertisers to monitor the commercials that they will run so that they're suitable for kids?
Like I said, AVOD for kids is definitely a space where advertisers want to get in. And sometimes you can't really control all the time where and how your ads are showing, but still it's very attractive space for advertisers. So with working with content creators that have just a solo channel, we saw really good engagement with advertising, really good demand showing, and monetization was really working great. So that was the reason why we shifted it to our channel, and pretty much the fill rates are about, depend on the seasonality, but it's about 80% to 90%, which is make us to take that decision for sure. We have to try it out and have to have our own and operated property that it's going to work on advertisers, and because we do have a good response, yes.
In a moment, we'll get into some other directions that Kids Room TV might take in the future, and also get into what VlogBog is doing elsewhere in the neighborhood of getting new channels off the ground. We're speaking with Anna McMichael, the partnership director at VlogBox, that's the parent company of Kids Room TV. Kids Room is available now on Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, and TV sets with Android TV as the operating system, with other smart TV platforms and multi-channel bundles going through those platforms down the road. Anna joins us live from San Diego this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Sound outbound with you at the other end of the U.S. of A, that's Nueva York, which is now having 63 degrees on this first day of autumn 2022. You have a question or comment meeting this with Anna, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04Benet. In case you don't know, I'm now back on television every Wednesday with Sports Grid. That's the Sports Information Network on their daily program, Sports Newswire. We had our first go-around where I cover the world of TV sports this past Wednesday, and I'll be back again next Wednesday around 2:40, 2:45 Eastern Time, 11:40, 11:45 a.m. Pacific. That's Sports Newswire on Sports Grid Network, available on smart TV sets and smart devices all over the place. Anna, do you see, first of all, are you finding people, content creators, now that you're on with this service, more content creators coming in with original content ideas or submissions, especially U.S.-based creators?
Sorry, say that again?
Are you seeing submissions, and now that you're on the air with this, from content creators who would like to be part of the channel, especially, let's say, animators based here in the United States?
Yes, absolutely. Because when they see that we have bigger brands and we have some brands that have big recognition, a lot of content creators want to jump right in because they know that the channel is going to get exposure because we have about 300 hours plus of content. Of kids content. So that's a great chance to get that audience that is already watching something else. So it's definitely a win-win situation here because they know that it's a great opportunity for them.
I was wondering, at some point, do you see additional kids' room TV services, let's say, for live-action kids programming or kids and family programming, as well as, let's say, an interactive situation where kids can interact with the content using their voice or other ways or their voice remote or other means?
Yes, I totally can see that space going towards what you just said, because it's right. You have to keep, you know, you want to keep kids engaged. You don't, you want to be, you want them to remember the content. You want them to stay. So as CTV environment develops towards that direction, like we do have some interaction with, we have some examples of interaction with kids content already, where content creator might have a little game on mobile, let's say, and then you kind of connect your show with your game on the phone where you can, it's like a simple game on the phone, but your kids get engaged with the brand, with the idea of your show. So, and this is just the beginning. I feel like there is way more steps ahead of us where we can get even more engagement from kids as they're watching the show.
Mm-hmm. What I was thinking about in terms of interactive was actually going to the television set, because now you have a critical mass of smart TV sets and smart TV devices that allow you to control how you watch and use the set with your voice or with a voice remote, because artificial intelligence is built in with audio services like Siri, Google Assistant, Alexa, and so on and so forth. And also recently we had an interactive service called DaVinci Kids, which is now starting to get on smart TV sets and devices, which allow kids to interact with the programming and do it through the set as opposed to having to do it with a smartphone or a tablet or something else. Talk about BogBog, the parent company. What other channels are in development or you would be introducing, let's say, between now and the end of the year?
Yeah, so we are actually working on a couple of new channels right now. I would keep it as a surprise for you guys for future, but yes, we do work. We have been worked about two new channels that we are going to be launching on the market probably beginning of next year. Same monetization model, but we definitely don't want to stop with having just one channel live in the U.S. market for kids.
Mm-hmm. I understand that you've set up channels elsewhere outside of the U.S., so it sounds like the U.S. is like a new market for your company.
No, it's not. Not really a new market. I would say, so Kids Room TV is available worldwide. And the reason why I kind of given, I'm emphasizing the U.S. is because U.S. is probably the country that has the most amount of connected TV and devices, right? And some people have few TVs in the house. They have more connected TV devices. Some have Roku and Amazon together. So as a market, we are very much a busy market on the connected TV. So I would say the biggest one for Amazon and Roku for sure. But still, it develops in LATAM. It develops in Europe. It develops in Asia. So and Kids Room will be and is available worldwide as the future channels.
Yeah. Well, with smart TV sets and smart TV devices constantly increasing their channel capacity and their capabilities, interactivity, all sorts of other things too, like telehealth, teleeducation, and also with the fact that we have these multi-channel bundles that are exploding with new services, some of which have original content. Are you starting to get, proposals from people who want to launch new networks through BogBog? And secondly, at some point, does BogBog turn into a multi-channel bundle on its own?
Yes, we can see that happening. We do have requests from content creators already, because you know, it's kind of like a word of mouth situation, especially when you go on the trade shows and you meet different people and you meet different businesses. So we do have a lot of requests. So multi-channel platform, it might be something that we can consider in the future. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Final question for you, Anna. It seems in the area of family programming, or family, what I call all ages programming now. There's some interesting trends going on. Some are very positive, some are negative. On the positive side, you're seeing mega content services like Apple TV Plus, Disney Plus, really digging deep into doing kids and family programming and so far doing well. On the other side, you have HBO Max and Warner Bros. Discovery, which decided we are not going to do kids and family programming. Gordita Chronicles, which is a show that we covered on this program this summer, critically acclaimed, getting an audience, but it was canceled by HBO Max simply because it's a kids and family, it's an all-ages show, and we're not getting into that content. At least we're stopping that on a temporary basis. Do you see some room, let's say, for your company to produce a service or make a content service that would be family-oriented, you know, programming for all ages?
Potentially, I would say we probably would want to separate it from Kids Room TV because Kids Room TV has its own target. So family-oriented content, that might be different channels, different separate channel that we would have in the future. But I think at this point, we don't have a plan to mix them together. So we kind of want to break them down and keep that one for age from 0 to 12 at this point.
Mm-hmm. I'll add, since we have a little bit of time, one other question. Are there any plans, let's say, because you're an ad-supported venture, to perhaps next year participate in the digital content new fronts that the Interactive Ad Bureau is doing?
To participate where?
To participate next year in the digital content new fronts. That's sort of the what TV has, the upfront events. Digital content new front is a week, two-week event where individual companies like yours would showcase their ventures, showcase their channels, their programming to the ad community.
Yeah, that's something that we would be interested in, yes.
And we will leave the conversation there. Again, Kids Room TV, one of a number of channels being done by BlockBox, the parent company. It is now available on Roku, Apple TV, Amazon Fire TV, and cable and TV sets that have Android TV as their operating system, with other smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles to come. More details about the service online and the parent company. Here's where you go. BlogBox.com is V-L-O-G-B-O-X, BlogBox.com. Anna McMichael, Partnership Director at BlogBox and Kids Room TV, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations on getting this new service off the ground. Keep us posted on new creators and new channels that you discover. We'd love to have them and maybe have you back or your fellow executives on down the road. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome, Anna. Take care. Have a super weekend.
Thank you. You too, guys.
Anna McMichael, Partnership Director at BlogBox and Kids Room TV, joining us live from San Diego. You are listening to Marvel Televised. We are the program all about TV's current and future. We come your way using Mondays and Fridays and the other days at 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. And we're also present on podcasts on a variety of leading platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Google Podcasts at podcast.google.com, also Amazon Music, including Vizio Smart Television Sets, and other leading podcast platforms as well. Remember that after we go off the air with an episode, it will be on those platforms within minutes. Plus, we also have our own website, tomorrowwillbetelevised.onpodium.com. That's tomorrowwillbetelevised.onpodium.com. And if you check out the home screen of that website, you will note that there's a question box at the bottom. So if you have a question about the world of television, use that box. Get it to me. If I use your question on the air and we answer it, you get the credit. So check it out. Tomorrow will be televised.onpodium.com. Coming up in our next half hour, at long last, we have a classic trivia winner. You will find out who that winner is and the answer to the question we posed over the last 2 weeks. But first, we'll go live to Los Angeles and we'll speak with one of the TV reporters at the popular entertainment news website, The Wrap. Natalie Oganesian will join me right after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. Listen to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tune.com. Together, reach over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. You want to catch up on Big Brother on CBS? Well, check out the Big Brother Recap Show on BTR tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. That's the Big Brother Recap Show tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, Best Beach are always available to you 24/7 at YouTube.com. YouTube now available more and more on smart TV sets and devices and multi-channel bundles. Welcome back to the second of our three half hours this Friday afternoon. Up tomorrow, be televised. Night Edition coming your way. We're just getting started right here from New York. Simon, I'm Bob with you for the Big Apple. 63 degrees at the bottom of the hour. More great guests coming your way in the hour ahead, and we invite you to be part of the program. So simple. Pick up the phone. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. My next guest is one of the top TV reporters at the top entertainment news site, The Wrap, founded by Sharon Waxman. She joins us live from L.A., and her name is Natalie Ovenisian. Natalie, welcome in.
Hi, Simon. Thank you so much for having me today.
It is a pleasure to have you. So it's 2 weeks now into the new television season. What kind of things are popping up from there on the radar screen?
Yeah, as you know, all the fall shows are ramping back up again from the broadcast network. So all those procedurals that really pull in those ratings for the networks, whereas on CBS, Fox, NBC, and all of those, and, you know, the reality competition shows, Dancing with the Stars, The Voice, all of those are back. So at The Wrap, we're ramping up coverage for that. And, of course, viewers are tuning in, and all eyes are kind of on those ratings and how those shows are doing.
I want to get to the ratings for the broadcast network shows in a moment because there's some very interesting trends popping. But first, since you brought up Dancing with the Stars, what kind of feedback are you getting about their move from ABC to Disney Plus, which started this past Monday?
Yeah, definitely. My colleague Katie actually wrote up a piece on the ratings that showed that ABC's trade, you know, Dancing with the Stars, as you mentioned, is on Disney Plus. Did pay off good Monday Night Football, which saw blockbuster ratings. So that'll be an interesting shift moving forward to it being the first live show to be on the streamer on Disney Plus this season.
Is there any thought that people were able to find the show on Disney Plus and to watch it without commercials, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern time? And also, was it easier for people to vote on which celebrities and their ballroom partners should stay in the competition?
I'm not sure. I think that'll be interesting to see more as the season unfolds, but definitely I know that commercials can be such a pain for some viewers, so that is definitely a bonus for people who are trying to see what's happening in the show as it unfolds and maybe make them more likely to stay tuned for the entire program rather than, you know, if they turn on their TV, they catch a commercial, they might switch to something else, or, you know, as they're watching, they get to commercial and then they switch there as well. So definitely some bonuses, I believe, in that regard.
So far, it looks that most of the broadcast network shows that are either launching this week or the last 2 weeks or have come back. For example, last night, the big three-hour crossover event of Law & Order, Organized Crime, Special Victims Unit, and L&O, the mothership, that so far, in terms of broadcast viewership, that the ratings are down, that they have, that roughly speaking, it seems the range seems to be 5 million to 7 million viewers at a pop. Is that what you're finding also?
Yeah, those ratings that are coming in right now, so we'll be taking a look at those later today and writing those up. But it's interesting that you mentioned that. I think there's a lot to be discussed as well. I mean, as we know, like, broadcast viewership is falling as more people cut the cord, but there is still an audience for those long-running series. But with that, there's also renewed discussions about, you know, the presence that these cop procedurals have in our culture as a whole and how people feel about them following 2020 protests and moving forward. So that, I'm sure, has some degree of impact on maybe declining viewership as well.
Mm-hmm. If we have time, I want to go back, particularly with Law & Order, because of John Oliver's episode 2 weeks ago about L&O. And want to get your thoughts versus my thoughts on it, but we'll do that a little bit later. But one thing that's very interesting is that are you getting any sense that any new series are breaking out? For example, Quantum Leap on NBC.
Definitely. I think we still have to see how those all play out. You know, some of the new series are also competing with some breakout shows that are going into their sophomore installments. Like the most notable one is Abbott Elementary, and there's also The Cleaning Lady, that is Fox's, one of Fox's top shows. So it'll be interesting to see if, you know, that familiar IP also plays a role in helping these series, like Quantum Leap, or maybe even, you know, this is further down the line, Lopez versus Lopez, which will be premiering in November.
It seems, by the way, Natalie, that when it comes to the broadcast networks, that their new shows are being spaced, not as many premieres in September as there used to be, that they're being spaced October, right, November, January, mid-season, spring. And in many cases, in some cases, they're holding off the big shows until early 2023.
Definitely, yeah. I did notice that, and we were talking about that amongst our team. Like, for example, one of my main networks is the CW, and it, almost all of their series are held until October, which is interesting because, you know, if those shows are geared toward, you know, a younger skewing audience, even though we saw that the CW average age was actually in the 50s. If their target audience is college students or, you know, people in high school, that's typically when schooling ramps up. So it's interesting to see how those shows will be impacted by that, if at all. And, you know, if there's any impact that maybe COVID-related delays still had on productions, or, you know, things getting shifted around, you know, whether that's just other related delays. I know there's been a lot of switch-ups in terms of showrunners and some of these procedurals and other things like that.
As a matter of fact, I think I understand that Quantum Leap had a change in showrunners. Martin Guerrero, who was an executive producer, mm-hmm. is now the showrunner. And this came out early after the first episodes were filmed. Also, are you getting what is the sense there about the coronavirus pandemic? Are shows able to stay tuned to their production schedules, especially now that for a lot of people, it's no longer a pandemic, it's an endemic?
Definitely. I think it's still a lingering thought in production's minds. That's definitely something that's come up, you know. My colleague is also looking to, you know, schedule a set visit for a show, and some considerations are being taken on part of, you know, the crew to make sure everyone's safe when she gets there. Other things like recently, this is not a broadcast show, but the morning show Wrapped, they lost, their producers lost a lawsuit with their insurance company over millions of dollars of, you know, delays in production the previous season. And so I do think that is still a consideration, even if it's not as much in the forefront of the production team's minds. And I think moving forward as well, you know, Dancing with the Stars, going back to that, was hit with 4 COVID cases, even though no one ended up getting sick. That is going to be something that impacts, I think, all aspects of entertainment, across theater, across TV, across film. People just need to be more careful, even if it's not as dire as it used to be maybe several months ago or even a year ago. And speaking from the journalist perspective as well, you know, the TCAs happened over the summer, and they were supposed to be, you know, this big return to an in-person event in Pasadena, but those were all shifted to virtual panels and programming. So it'll be interesting to see if the winter TCAs actually do come back in person.
In a moment, we're going to talk about Lord of the Rings, as well as House of the Dragon, and the impact of the Emmy Awards and the very low ratings that it got and the disastrous reviews for the way the show went. Not for the awards, the way the show went. We are speaking with the TV reporter from The Wrap, the popular entertainment website from Los Angeles, Natalie Oganesian. And she joins us live this half hour here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Tom and I'm with you from the other side of the United States. That's New York, 63 degrees and sunny and pretty nice. Very bright here at the bottom of the hour. You have a question or comment for our guest, make the call, 646-652-2906. We use the chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. We have 3 episodes coming your way next week, Monday, Thursday, and Friday at this very hour. And joining me as the lead guest on Monday's show will be Philip Gilpin Jr. He's the executive director of one of the largest TV festivals in the nation, the Catalyst Festival. And the Catalyst Story Institute is the sponsor. And next week is their festival. We'll go live to Duluth, Minnesota for it. They will have more than 100 TV series pilots, pitches, and more showcased. Philip Gilpin Jr. from Catalyst Story Institute, live from Duluth, Minnesota, Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. He's our lead guest then. On tomorrow, we'll be televised. So, Natalie, we are now a month into this House of the Dragon and Lord of the Rings battle of epic TV. And the question I have is it really a battle, given that it seems that both programs are finding a big audience?
That's a great question. I think that's something that we over at The Wrap are also trying to figure out. Recently, one of my coworkers a couple of days ago produced a chart that said demand for House of the Dragon could actually double that of Rings of Power in the coming weeks. And there is a close eye on these big bets that both HBO and Amazon are putting on these staple IP-based genre fantasy shows. You know, people are really closely watching Nielsen streaming rankings, but also just those rankings that HBO has released. We still stand to see if Amazon will release similar ones for Rings of Power. And there's a lot of similarities, but there's also a lot of differences with these series. And you would think that, you know, people who watch one show would be more likely to watch another, but that actually has not been the case. What was funny is that actually HBO released its pilot episode fully online on YouTube to stream for free right as Rings of Power debuted, because there was a bit of a gap, about a week and a half between the show's release dates. So, you know, those episodes are continuing to be rolled out, and I think a lot of eyes are on how they're going to do. As you know, House of the Dragon already got its season 2 renewal, but Rings of Power has a loose sort of commitment to its 5-season arc, and has poured about twice as much money into that show as HBO has for House of the Dragon. So I think definitely internally there's a sense on the executive side and that these shows are competing, even if audiences may not feel that way.
Mm-hmm. Does it show, though, that there is a great audience for a variety of fantasy, what I would call epic TV shows of this nature? That, you know what, share and share alike. It doesn't have to be a winner. It has to be super winners or super losers. Everybody wins.
Definitely. I think there are such huge appetites for these shows. I mean, one of them that's sort of similar, but of course different in certain aspects, is Netflix's Stranger Things. I think another huge genre show, also based in, you know, the sci-fi realm that Netflix has poured a lot of money into, and that is ramping up for its final season in the coming months. I think people these are the types of shows that people, you know, especially for HBO's House of the Dragon, they sit in and it's appointment viewing for them. It's kind of a phenomenon. And I think every network or cable company is trying to emulate, you know, the peak TV era of making a show a cultural staple and part of the zeitgeist. And I think that's still something that audiences are looking for as well.
Let's go to Emmy Awards. It's now been nearly 2 weeks since the Emmys. Two things seem to be very clear, Natalie. One is the shows that deserve to win, win. There's no criticism about who won. Succession won for best drama. Ted Lasso won for best comedy. White Lotus won for best miniseries. The made-for-TV movie, I want to go back to the made-for-TV movie situation, because that's something that definitely want to get into. But there's also pretty uniform agreement that the show itself was a disaster. It was a disaster in the ratings,
right?
Lowest rated major award show apart from the Tony Awards, less than 6 million people. It may have been around 5 million people if Mark Berman's numbers from Nielsen, the Performing Insider, our friend there, are correct. Obviously, the Jimmy Kimmel, Kenna Brunson situation and let's put Will Arnett in there too, was an absolute disaster. What's the fallout from the Emmys, specifically on the show?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, as you said, Emmys ratings were abysmal, like historic low, and we've seen that award shows in general just have fallen steadily as, you know, these producers are trying to garner eyeballs, and it's just not working. The show, as you said, was a mess. And there was this very palpable attempt to cater to, you know, what's trendy or what's, you know, relatable or exciting to younger audiences. And that was just, that disconnect was very apparent with, you know, Kenan Thompson's opening sort of monologue, hodgepodge performance, musical performance. And I think it's back to the drawing board for the HFPA, for the Television Academy, to kind of retool what award shows mean to people and why people do tune in. Is it because they love TV? Is it because they love spectacle? I think there's a lot of room to, and over the years, you know, Emmys have relooked at their categories and what makes sense, and just, you know, whether that's booking the right talent. I do think there were people that were within conversations on and off stage, of course, but just doing something that feels both natural but also speaks to whatever is, you know, trending in pop culture, in the TV landscape, and what audiences want to see. So I do think there needs to be some retooling in that aspect, and we'll see if any changes to formatting are made. You know, this is the, a related thing is the Oscars. You know, they tried that virtual or off awards show announcement of more of the below the line and creative categories, and people were upset about that, and that didn't even end up working for time constraints and just how people viewed the show. So it'll be interesting to see if Emmys try something like that as well.
You know, you hit it on the head, Natalie. With both the Emmys and the Oscars, it's one of the big reasons, and this is something that both academies have to address, is stop just relating to the people in the room. Start relating to the audience mm-hmm. out there. It's like they want to celebrate the art, and they want to be engaged in the art, and that appears to be not what's happening with the Emmys. The two things I used in my commentary last week about it was sloppy and amateurish, sloppy directing,
yes.
sloppy camera work, sloppy. The dance number was sloppy. The In Memoriam was an absolute disaster. But most importantly, both these shows is they seem to have a combination of over-the-head jokes that the audience doesn't get, but the home audience doesn't get, the focus on wokeness, which is either using this as like a political platform or diatribes or inside baseball, as opposed to just show the art, just demonstrate some competency in showcasing your art and encouraging the big people in the art to show up and be part of this. In the case of the Emmys, two things also caught my eye. Number one, the In Memoriam, like Turner Classic Movies does this wonderful event called TCM Remembers every year, this featurette, which is complete and comprehensive about the people who pass away. And they don't, and for some reason, why can't they use those folks, both the Emmys and the Oscars, to do an In Memoriam segment that is very, very appropriate? And the second thing is, in the case of the Emmys, the made-for-TV movie category. We have a genre now that more networks and more streaming services are doing, and yet the category itself, best made-for-TV movie, isn't on the main show. It's now in the Creative Awards category. I hope it sees. But the other thing is that we used to have a situation where the made-for-TV movie and miniseries categories and acting, directing, right, were separate. Now they're all together, and made-for-TV movie people don't get a break.
Yeah, that's interesting. Also, I'll add to that, the made-for-TV movie aspect is also starting to conflict with some Oscar categories because, you know, what really goes into Coda, you know, which is an Apple TV Plus release, being not a made-for-TV movie, there's some eligibility issues there. I think Emmys over the years have struggled to hone in on what category can be appropriate to what show. We most recently saw that, I think, with miniseries, a lot of shows, like, for example, Big Little Lies, that won in that category, you know, yeah, were only a miniseries and then was renewed for season two, and how much that is allowed in terms of, oh, no, we're genuinely only sticking to this one season, and these are all the episodes that there will be, but oh, if it's popular enough, then we will renew for season two. And also issues with something they announced most recently with eligibility windows, you know, Stranger Things released in parts one and two, and how that will no longer be allowed moving forward. So all those considerations in terms of retooling categories to make it less confusing, both for voters, but also for people who are wondering, oh, this show just came out. Why is it not nominated? Well, maybe it didn't fit the eligibility window, or maybe the category itself was not the right one.
Mm-hmm. And something else maybe the Emmy people have to look at is maybe having, for every category, 10 people be nominated. Because there also, we have in the acting category, we're seeing multiple nominees, like 3-4 people from a show like The White Lotus get in and other people not get in. Going back to Law and Order, John Oliver made his Law and Order episode 2 weeks ago. What kind of fallout has there been from that?
I think it's definitely something that people are discussing, you know, obviously has reached showrunners' ears as well. I think that is a many people see it as a controversial issue. I know that John Oliver is very straight and to the point. And there's a lot of talk about propaganda on television and what that new era looks like. So, including, you know, going back to the Emmys as well, that whole segment with the Law and Order main stars, Mariska Hargitay and Chris Belloni. And that didn't land quite right with some of the audiences watching as well. So I think that is a continued discussion that will happen over the entire fall season and beyond. Because it is, as long as these procedurals are on the air, it's going to be something that is divisive, but also, you know, people feel strongly about the fact that it is things like Law and Order and FBI may not be realistic in how they depict, you know, police relations with communities of color, specifically Black communities. So, and I know John Oliver himself has, you know, been in hot water from his opposition with what he said in the past, both, you know, Queen Elizabeth and things like that as well. So I think the fallout really is just these continued conversations about what TV should and shouldn't be showing, or how showrunners can, you know, they're obviously given a finite amount of time to depict a storyline, and they have to close their ABC plots within the span of one 43-minute episode, and what scope they can have in portraying these issues in a nuanced way while also, you know, the goal of these shows is entertainment. So I think all those factors will be considered by anyone who is tuning into John Oliver's show and is watching these series.
I really appreciate your thoughts about that. I will have my thoughts about it next week on one of our episodes, so I'll hold off on that. But before you go, is there a show coming up that you think a lot of is going to get a lot of attention? Like, for example, Interview with a Vampire coming up on AMC in early October, or Wednesday. We talked about it, that now announced today that they'll be on the Addams Family spinoff. They'll be on from Tim Burton on Netflix in November, or anything like, you know, or Tulsa King from Paramount Plus with Sylvester Stallone.
Oh, definitely. All of those shows, I firmly agree with you. Funny that you mentioned Wednesday. We were just talking about the fact that it was a bit of a missed opportunity to not have it, you know, premiere around Halloween time. But I'm still definitely going to tune in and watch that. I'm excited for that. But also, I think, you know, later looking forward in the future, I know this has no release date yet and is still filming, but I'm personally really excited for Succession Season 4. I know that will be a huge one. other shows that are coming up are those, you know, Netflix more YA geared series, Outer Banks and You, as well as Never Have I Ever, those series that I know some of my audience really likes to get information on. Then there's also on the broadcast side, these IP-based shows also spin off like The Winchesters tied to the Supernatural universe, which I do think will be pretty popular, as well as Walker Independence. There's an audience there. So there's a lot of great stuff for many, many people of various tastes to tune into moving forward into the fall and beyond.
If you want to check out Natalie's work, check out The Wrap, very popular and very good entertainment news website available 24/7, and you can find it at www.thewrap.com. It's www.thewrap.com. Always good reading about the world of television and the world of entertainment in general. Natalie Oganisian, TV reporter there, thank you again for joining us. Pleasure to have you for the first time, and hopefully come on back soon. We would love to have you. It's been a great pleasure having you on.
Thank you so, so much, Simon. Have a great rest of your show and day.
You too, and a fantastic weekend. All the best.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Now the Oganisian joining us live from Los Angeles, where The Web and The Wrap is based. And now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week, and I'm happy to say for the first time in nearly 2 months, we have a winner. And our new winner is Peter Kozlowski from Ashland, Oregon. It's Peter Kozlowski from Ashland, Oregon. Congratulations, Peter. You came in with the answer earlier today. So for that, you will get the Nickelodeon Loud House Christmas card set, plus two great books, bestsellers, The Unexpected Danny Green by Paul Friedman, and Flirting with Fame by Dan Harari, the celebrated entertainment publishing guru, both of them recent guests on this program. The question, who composed and performed the theme song for Chico and the Man? The answer, Jose Feliciano, who, by the way, is the subject of a television special earlier this month, and he is going to be performing at an upcoming Telemundo Musical Awards special in a couple of weeks. So once again, the answer, it was Jose Feliciano who composed the theme song for Chico and the Man. That's the great 1970 sitcom on NBC starring the late Freddie Prinze and Jack Albertson. Incidentally, Feliciano actually wrote two theme songs for that show. The one that was the opener that many people remember was also a pop hit as well, and also a closing song, a little bit more grittier. It starts with Chico was born in El Barrio. Anyway, he did both. And congratulations again to Peter Kozlowski from Ashland, Oregon. We'll get the prize out to you ASAP. Thank you for playing. We'll have a brand new classic trivia question for you on Monday's episode. And if you know the answer, do what Peter did. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and your mailing address as well. If we don't get a winner by end of day Monday, we'll post the question Tuesday morning on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. We're closing in, by the way, on 800 Twitter followers at that very place. So we'll get that question for you on Monday, and let's see if we can get our second weekly winner in a row then, okay? Remember, in order to win, just like Peter did, you have to be in. So do so, and all the very best. Once again, congratulations, Peter Kozlowski from Ashland, Oregon. Our first winner, by the way, since we've done our trivia contest for, I guess that's two, almost 3 years now, from that neck of the U.S. of A. This is Tomorrow Be Televised. We are the program All About the Tube. Happy to have you with us on this first full day of autumn, 2022. Beautiful Friday afternoon, 60 degrees near the top of the hour. And if you have a question or comment for our upcoming guest, make the phone ring, 646-652-2906. We'll use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And when we come back after the top of the hour, we will have our takeaway of the week. Roku made a very, very big deal late yesterday, and we'll tell you all about it and why it is our takeaway of the week. But first, Hulu is getting a lot of great buzz for its latest unscripted series, Best in Dough. If you love pizza and making pizza, it's quite some spectacle. And we will talk to one of the key executive producers behind that spectacle. He is the award winner, Dan Cutforth, who'll join us live from L.A. after we pause the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, streamer.com, tune.com, together reaching over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Post Time with the Greek comes your way on BTR tomorrow, and the Greek will certainly give you his take on all the big college football, pro football games, baseball, everything under the weekend. I'm sure some thoughts on Aaron Judge, maybe trying to break Roger Maris's record, to tie or break Roger Maris's record tonight. That game, by the way, is on Apple TV Plus, and MLB Network will break in every time Judge is at bat here at Yankee Stadium. Don't forget, post time of the Greek tomorrow, 11:30 a.m. Eastern, 8:30 a.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best we charge 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our final half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Friday afternoon. Again, the first full day of autumn 2022. And welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Appleton with you live from New York, 63 degrees at the top. Beautiful sunny skies. Hope all is going great going into your weekend. And we have a wonderful guest coming away in our final half hour. So be interactive with them. Give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You'll catch us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio. Well, check out our chat room. We want to hear from you there, too. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. While the promo is on the air, connect with others by using Facebook Timeline. Just click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn screen, follow the instructions, other people can be live with you. And joining us live right now from Los Angeles, one of the pioneering executive producers of unscripted television with credits like Bands on the Run for VH1, as well as Project Runway on Bravo and Lifetime. His latest work with his partner, Jane Lipset, is Best in Doe, which premiered last week on Hulu. Joining us live in Los Angeles, Dan Cutforth. Dan, it's great to have you back.
Nice to be back, Simon. Thanks for having me.
You're very, very welcome. And Jane, as we speak, is here in New York, and I believe shooting a scene from Best in Doe. Where is that show at
no,
right now?
No, she's actually she's shooting Project Runway right now. Project Runway season 20 just got underway, so that's where she is. I think Christian is supervising a model fitting as we speak.
Oh, great. We'll give Jane our best. We've had her on with you on previous episodes way back when, and thrilled that Project Runway is coming back for a brand new season. But let's talk, and we'll
Absolutely.
Talk about your new company that the two of you started in recent years. Both of you, of course, were with Magical Elves for many years. Great production company, as I said, one of the pioneering places for unscripted TV. But let's talk about first Best in Doe. How is that show going? What kind of feedback are you getting from viewers?
It seems to be really positive. It's I think our whole perspective on doing, you know, a show about pizza was that pretty much everyone loves pizza, and I think people are really enjoying the show. It shows a really broad range of people, so every episode has three people of different backgrounds competing together. So, for example, the very first episode has three Italian grandmas competing against each other. We have another episode where there are Michelin-starred chefs, another one where there are college students. So anyone who might ever kind of come, you know, get together to make pizza, basically.
And what kind of competition, what kind of paces do these chefs go through, or these people go through?
Yeah, well, we have two challenges in every episode. The first one we call the out-of-the-box challenge, and we push them out of their comfort zone right away. We try and see. So we made the Italian grandmas do their version of TikTok trends in pizza. That didn't go quite as planned, but it was very entertaining. And then the second challenge always allows them to do what they do best. So that's where they're competing for money. The first round is, you know, they're also competing for money in the first round, but in the second round, that's the sort of the winner of the show wins based on what they do when they're able to do their best job and make the pizza that people come to them for and you know, the pizza that people love the most.
How long have you, Jane, and your colleagues thought about doing a pizza competition? What inspired it?
Well, it actually happened. Candace Nelson, who's a friend of ours, she's the founder of Sprinkles, and she was when we were producing Sugar Rush for Netflix, she was one of the judges on that show. She opened a pizza restaurant here in L.A. A few years back and introduced us to her chef, Daniele Uditi, who is sort of the head judge on Best in Doe. And we fell in love with him and his infectious enthusiasm for pizza. And it was really, as we were talking, we were trying to think about what show could we do with Daniele, and we were thinking about all kinds of different baking ideas. And then it just hit us that actually pizza was perfect. No one's really done that show, and people love pizza. In fact, when we pitched the show, we sent pizza from Pizzana, Daniele's restaurant, to the executives that we were pitching. So we would be talking to them over Zoom, and they'd be tucking into this delicious pizza, and it was one of the most effective sales strategies we've ever employed.
Mm-hmm. What are you finding about doing this kind of a competition where you are trying to pair three of a kind, like three Michelin star chefs or three Italian mamas who love pizza or super fans of the art?
It's quite a challenge to cast, for sure. It's not the easiest way to do it, especially in the era of COVID, because we not only had to have our three best candidates, we also had to have backups in case someone went down with COVID. So to find three great people that you really wanted to spend that time with on the show and who really fit the bill for what we were looking for was a little bit of a challenge. But our casting team, a casting duo who we've worked with for years, came up with, you know, really amazing characters that we all fell in love with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how do you come up with the individual challenges? Like what kind of technique do you use to come up with the kind of brain power that says,
you know,
all right, we're going to do this challenge and we're doing this episode versus that challenge and we do it, let's say, second rather than first. How do you figure out what challenges you do and when?
Well, some of it's just based on experience of having done many different food shows and what we just, you know, what instinct tells us will work. There was debate, for example, about whether to have the, you know, the out-of-the-box challenge first or second, and we decided that if there was going to be a winner for the episode, they should win for doing, you know, making their very best pizza rather than something quirky that we would ask them to do. In terms of the ideas for those challenges, those out-of-the-box challenges, those tended to be we just tried to honestly just really think about what was the last thing those people would ever want to have to do ask them to do it.
We're speaking with Dan Cutforth, the award-winning executive producer of shows like Project Runway, which you heard is now in production on its latest season. And currently he's with Best in Dough. That is the series about pizza competitors in all sorts of different challenges. It's currently on Hulu, available on smart sets, smart devices, and some places through your local cable operator as well. Dan joins us live from Los Angeles. His partner Jane Lipson is in New York working on Project Runway as we speak. And Dan is with us live this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Abbott, I'm with you live from Nueva York on this first full day of autumn 2022. 63 degrees at the top of the hour. You have a question or comment for Dan? Ring it in, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Three episodes, triple header week coming your way to wrap up September here on Tomorrow We Televise next week. And on Monday, we'll go live to Duluth, Minnesota, where the annual Catalyst Festival is going to be underway. Catalyst Story Institute is the people behind it, and its executive director, Philip Gilpin Jr., will be joining us live from the scene, where it's expected next week that more than 100 TV series will be showcased, either as a pilot, as a script treatment, as a pitch, from hundreds of different people who are expected to be in attendance on site. That's Philip Gilpin Jr. from the Catalyst Story Institute, live from Duluth, Minnesota, where the festival is taking place all next week, right here exclusively, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, Monday, on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. What do you find when you do a show like this? How creative, how inventive do these people get to be when they're in, when they're under the microscope, if you will, under the pressure, under the TV cameras?
I think that really varies. Some people do crack under the pressure, and some people, you know, some people will play it a little safe sometimes so that they can make, you know, make sure that they put their best foot forward. And I think it really, I think one of the reasons that you see challenges in so many different shows is it really is a kind of window into who those people are and how they approach the world. I think that sometimes these kinds of shows in a weird way remind people of being in the workplace, for example, or, you know, maybe some kind of pressurized situation they have in their own life where they feel like they have too much to do and not enough time. And I think everyone has their own approach to that kind of stress, and some people rise to the occasion and some people crack. But, you know, I feel like that you really see sort of all of humanity reflected back in these kinds of challenges, if that doesn't sound too pompous. That's sort of how I've always found it to be. And I guess the other part of it is that one of the things that I love about these kinds of shows is that you kind of, you plan and think about what the challenge might be, and then you sit back and, you know, you wind it up, you sit back and you let it unfold, and you never know what's going to happen, and that's the sort of joy of it, really, is you get to experience it kind of like the way that the viewer does, just not edited.
Mm-hmm. Are there things you are learning about our national fetish with pizza through this show that surprised you, or that engaged you, and you and Jane, everybody, in some very unique ways?
There are some phrases that Daniele has either invented or that I'd never heard before. For example, he talks about something that called tip sag. That is a bad thing if you're making pizza. But we all know what that is. You know, when you're holding your slice of pizza and the end of it kind of flops over. You know, Daniele, if you watch the series, he's just a, you know, he's this sort of font of wisdom about pizza. And we got to learn a lot about how it can go wrong as well as how to make it great. We also had like an amazing experience with, unlike anything I've ever had on any other show I've ever made, where, you know, we shot 5 days a week, Monday to Friday, and then on Friday afternoon, Daniele would take over the kitchen, bring in dough and toppings, and make pizzas right then and there in front of us for the whole crew, and it was incredible sort of morale booster for everyone. So I got to see the master up close working his magic, and it is really amazing to sort of, I don't know, his facility with dough and the pizza oven. It really is quite an art.
Mm. Given this show is called Best in Dough, have there been any challenges that deal with the dough itself, whether it is you've got to shape the pie in a particular way? I mean, we have like a Sicilian pizza, deep dish pizza, so on and so forth, but like in a very unusual way, like a star. To use the dough in a different way, like this ingredient in the dough, like make it more cheesy or make it more saucy, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. We mainly left it to the competitors to manipulate the dough and think of different ways to use it. There were some challenges that we did. We wanted to do, we wanted to make sure that there was a gluten-free challenge in there with, you know, there were a few things like that we did where we kind of played around with what they could use for their dough. And it really is the sort of, it's the sort of framework for the whole thing. You know, there's only so much you can really mess with it because it's so important to their ability to do well on the show that they get to make their dough and use their own secrets. But there are all kinds of different things that were added into the dough at different points by different people, all kinds of different manipulations of shape and structure and all of those kinds of things. One of our judges on the show, we have three rotating judges, but Brian Ford is an absolute expert on dough, so there's a lot of takeaway about, you know, not in a lengthy, boring kind of way, but just a really fascinating, simple facts about dough and how, you know, how it works and why it looks the way it does and when it's good and when it's not. And I think all kinds of, just casual takeaway for viewers who come to be entertained by. I mean, it is a very fun, light show. There's a sense of humor about it and a sense of not taking itself too seriously. But at the same time, there is real information and takeaway that you get, and hopefully a new appreciation of pizza.
Yeah. How do you and Jane see food competition shows have evolved over the last few decades. I mean, originally we had Chopped on Food Network, and then other things have come from it, and it looks like it's going in all sorts of directions. There's the genre show like a Halloween Wars or Baking Championships or shows where it's kids and teenagers doing the cooking, or more recently you have Guy Fieri's latest show, which is sort of a mix of cooking and trivia, you know, sort of like trying to do Hollywood Game Night, Food Network style.
Yeah, that's a complicated question to answer because I think there's such a range of food shows from, you know, when we were at Magical Elves, we did Nailed It, which was, you know, almost like an antidote to other food shows, like trying to do something really different. And then also on Netflix, you've got a show like Chef's Table. And but I think it all dates back really for me to Iron Chef in terms of food competition. And I remember when that came on and people were just saying, what is this show? And getting sucked into it. And then we had, you know, shows like MasterChef and Hell's Kitchen and Top Chef, which we produced many seasons, that all kind of carved out their own space. These days, I think it's very challenging to come up with something that you haven't seen before in the food space. And so for us, a lot of it has revolved around embracing new trends that have emerged. So Nailed It came out of, a sort of social media trend. Is It Cake, which we just premiered this year on Netflix, also came out of the kind of the craze for sharing on social media all these amazing images of things that look like everyday objects but were actually made of cake. And I think the key, I always sort of believe that you have to show the audience something new to have success, something they can't get somewhere else, and then you have to have, you know, great characters and you have to tell the story really well. But in the food space, when you think about Food Network for 25 years has been filling the airwaves with different iterations of food competition and food documentary and travelogue and all the rest of it. It's definitely a real challenge to find that white space that hasn't been done to death at this point.
Isn't it fair to say, though, that because of Hulu and Netflix and Disney Plus and all these made content services, that this whole genre of food competition has been elevated? And it goes even full circle because Netflix this year brought back Iron Chef. We had Etienne Keller, the creator of Iron Chef America, on our program, who was involved in this reboot. And he was very impressed with the fact that because of Netflix, you have a bigger budget. He can make Kitchen Stadium a real stadium with like that special mystery section. It seems like all these mega content services and their take on food competition or the food genre has really helped, you know, you and Jane and your company and other people in the unscripted space sort of up their game or try different things.
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that there is a passionate audience for food programming it's great for us. We love to embrace the challenge of finding new ways to do food programming, and I personally really enjoy making those shows. They're a ton of fun to do, as long as the audience keeps embracing them and keeps looking for new content of that kind, that's going to be great. But there's never been more opportunity, I think, to sell that kind of programming than never been. There's never been a time when so many different outlets were making that kind of content.
We have a few more minutes with Dan Cutforth, the award-winning executive producer of Best in Dough, now playing on Hulu through smart TV sets, smart TV devices, and more stuff coming up. And we're going to talk about the company that Dan and his partner, Jane Listis, are now running called Alfred Street Industries. And we'll talk about that in a moment. And if you have a question or comment on our many minutes with Dan, give us a call, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, Simon Apple 04. By name, we have a call coming in. We'll get to that in a moment. And we'll let you know that also coming up before we leave you, our takeaway of the week. Roku had a big decision that they made late yesterday, and boy, the big one it was. We'll get to that. Let's take a call right now. Hello, you're on Swarby Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, Simon. It's Rick Webb calling from Philadelphia.
Rick, go right ahead.
My... let me see. Oh, my question is, like, you just started a new production company, and I saw that it says that it's a full service media and content production company. So does that mean that you guys, like, shoot it and edit, or you write the shows, or, like, how does all that work, and what's the biggest thing about starting a new production company?
To answer the first part of your question, we come up with ideas for shows, we develop them, pitch them to networks, then if a network buys one of our shows, we produce it from start to finish. We cast it, we produce the episodes, we figure out music, graphics, everything in between, and then we supervise the editorial, which for unscripted television is a huge part of the process as well. So a bit of everything, and we try, Jane and I, when we started this company, really wanted to to make sure that we were spending our time working on shows that we were really passionate about, and that really runs a very broad gamut. There's a real range of programming, from fun, light shows like Is It Cake and Best in Dough, to serious documentaries, crime series, a bit of everything. And in terms of the biggest challenge to starting up, it requires, it's very hard to just open a production company one day without any shows to make. We were lucky that when we left our old company, Magical Elves, we stayed involved in a couple of the projects that we had been working on at Magical Elves, and that gave us a little bit of financial comfort zone to be able to bring people in, spend money on development, develop and sell new shows, and all of that was going great until COVID came along and put an end to a lot of production in 2020, but we sort of bounced back from that, spent a lot of 2020 developing new shows, which we're now producing, and that's kind of the story.
Awesome. Well, thanks a lot for your answer, Dan, and continued success. And you and Simon both have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks for the question.
Thank you.
Absolutely, Rick.
Thanks,
take care. All the greatest. Rick Webber, our friend from Philadelphia, here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Two more questions before you go, Dan. First of all, when will the new season of Project Runway happen?
That will be, I don't think the air date is announced. It'll be next year, though.
And secondly, recently, Jersey Mike's, the popular national sub-chain, opened up a location in my neck of the woods, and I've had their subs, like three of them in the last 2 weeks. They're fantastic. Has anybody ever pitched a sub show, a show about making subs or sandwiches or sandwiches in general?
No, I don't think so. Not that I can think of. It's kind of an intriguing idea because people eat sandwiches, obviously every day. In fact, the first business that I ever started was a sandwich business back in England many years ago that lasted exactly 3 weeks until we were shut down by the health department. But, there's a lot of creativity that can come out of sandwiches, but I've never heard of one being pitched.
All right, maybe we'll give you an idea as you leave us.
All right, thank you for that.
There's a lot of competition now with Jersey Mike, Firehouse Subs, Subway, with all the new ads they've run up, the new sandwiches they're doing, the refresh of their menu, Blimpies, et cetera, et cetera. So there may be an idea in that.
It's a crowded marketplace, for sure.
Mm-hmm. For sure, Dan. Best in Dough, that's the new series from Dan and Jane's production company, Alfred Street Industries. It is on Hulu right now, available on smart TV sets, smart TV devices, and multi-channel bundles, too, and in some markets on your local cable system as well. Hulu.com is where you go online to find out more details about Dan's show and the other programs you can see, Scripted Unscripted, on Hulu. Dan, thank you again for joining us. Give our best to Jane, everybody at Alley Streets. And good luck with the new season of Project Runway as well. And it's been a pleasure to have you back. And hopefully next time both of you come, because you've always been some of our favorite guests on the program.
Oh, thanks so much, Simon. Jane, we're sorry to miss you, and thanks for having me.
A pleasure. Take care. Have a super weekend.
You too. Take care. Bye.
You got it. Destin Doe, executive producer Dan Cutfort, joining us live from Los Angeles. Time now for our regular Friday feature, the takeaway of the week, the development or two that happened this week that you should take away from because it incompacts It will impact the way you watch and use television. Well, Roku has been on a very interesting streak of late. They're up to a lot of things, including the fact they were nominated for 2 Emmy Awards for made-for-TV movies, Zoe's Extraordinary Christmas, and the Reno 911 will be taken from those Q-Buy shorts. Well, yesterday afternoon, very late yesterday afternoon, Roku made a big, big deal that definitely will impact what they are up to. And as they themselves have said, they want to become a next-generation media player, and they have found a person to do it. He is current Fox Entertainment executive Charlie Collier. A lot of people think he's one of the best programmers in television. In his role at Fox, he has done everything from get Tubi off the ground in a big way, forming Blockchain Creative Labs to help get new programming off the ground, especially animated shows, acquired Beno Box Entertainment, came up with hits like The Masked Singer and The Cleaning Lady, and also doing much, and also acquiring Marvis Entertainment, major made-for-TV movie and very soon TV series producer. And he is going to be coming in to Roku as the head of Roku Media. He's going to have a lot to say about what they're doing with advertising, including their groundbreaking move with Walmart and other advertisers and shoppable ads where you order products over the TV set. You don't need a smartphone or a tablet or a QR code. You just do it all with your voice or your voice remote. And in case you don't know, Roku is committed to launching at least 50 new television series, scripted and unscripted, and others over the next 2 years. That is from now until the end of 2024. You better believe that with Charlie Collier, who is one of the most inventive, unique programming executives around, they may have the person who can make all this happen and a whale of a lot more, especially maybe moves into interactive television as well. So anyway, Charlie will be joining Roku next month. He'll be based here in New York. And as soon as he gets settled, we will try to do an hour-long interview with him about what he leaves behind at Fox and what he'll join and get to the table at Roku. I know him very well, known him for years since his days at AMC. He's considered, like I said, one of the best programming executives in the business. This is a major big deal for Roku, and it's showing that Roku is not backing down from their intent by head Anthony Woods and crew that they want to be not just a next-generation media company, but a great next-generation media company. I want to thank all of our guests for being here today, all of you for tuning in. We'll be back on Monday, first of our triple-header episodes to wrap up the month of September. And joining us live from Duluth, Minnesota, where the annual Catalyst TV Festival will be underway, first time in person in several years, the executive director of the Catalyst Story Institute, Philip Gilpin, Jr. We're also working on other guests as well, including the possibility of a major guest from the Paley Center for Media dealing with the upcoming Paley Weekend. That's next weekend, October 1st and 2nd. Came in late on today's program. Want to catch up on episodes missed? Go to the homepage, lobsterfreedom.com says televised. Don't forget, you can check us out on podcasts. And remember, you can also email me at simonapple04@yahoo.com with any questions, comments you have about the show. Also find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Facebook, LinkedIn, Simon Applebaum. Twitter at UBCSimonWT. We do respond to what you have to say within 24 hours. That's our promise to you. Why? Because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed are those of the participants, not necessarily the Blog Talk Radio and other services of the program. Andy Toe is BTAR's General Manager. Dave Sonberg is Head of Content. Website supervised by On Podium. The Internet's new podcast outpost, Guitarist Vegas, is our web coordinator. But tomorrow we televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a fabulous weekend. Back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio, all of our podcast sites, and our website, tomorrow we televise on podium.com. Whatever comes to you now and then, please make it safe and great. Have been vaccinated. Check in with your doctor. Find out what your medical situation is. Learn about all the alternative treatments, the shots and boosters that you have available to you. In many cases, available at your local pharmacy, free of charge and without a prescription. And then make a great choice, your choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.